Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, live from Wimbledon, up on the broadcast roof, overlooking Court 18, which can mean only one thing. There is no threat of rain, real or imagined, and we are in position A. Greetings to anyone joining us live on YouTube, greetings to anyone joining us not live on YouTube, and greetings to anyone joining us via your usual podcast platforms. We are delighted to be here in the place that we were always supposed to be. And we've been watching some tennis being hit on... Tennis being hit? That's the lingo, Catherine. the old tennis being hit. Tennis balls being hit on Court 18 behind us earlier on today. David and Matt have fallen into the Grigor Dimitrov bear trap.
Well, I was trying to lull David in. Not that he really needs any... lulling in.
It was one comment. You said one comment, and I was there.
Griggle's hitting the ball well.
Yeah, I was saying it sarcastically, but David was lapping it up. I mean, he was, to be fair. He was playing a practice set against Alex de Minaur, and he was flying. And then they played a tie break, and he suddenly got really tight.
So normal service resumed.
Did you, David? Be honest here, after watching Grigor Dimitrov play like a world number one, did you look up his draw?
No, I didn't. I was too busy marvelling at what I was seeing and actually taking in, whilst I was doing other things, just getting occasional updates from Matt saying, he's absolutely destroying de Minaur. I mean, I don't think de Minaur's won a point. And I'm sort of thinking, de Minaur reached the final Queens. So, you know.
He was destroying him until he... got into a tight situation. Right. He got tight in practice, David.
Yeah.
Mm. And the other sort of amusing, well, maybe not amusing, maybe something terrible has happened, but we were looking at the scoreboard, and it's been a day where lots of members have been playing and testing out the courts and all that sort of thing. And up on the scoreboard, it said Colin Fleming defeated Dominic Inglot 7-6, retired.
I don't know if Dom Inglot knows that
is being brandished
that,
everywhere.
That ignominious result has been broadcast to all of Wimbledon.
All of the score lines were retired after the first set, so I think they were testing out the scoreboards.
Right. Okay.
But maybe not. Maybe there were lots of simultaneous...
On this scoreboard I was looking at, there were some definite...
There were completed matches.
Completed matches.
Right.
There
okay.
was also on centre court today, scheduled at 2 p.m., was Billie Jean King against Deborah Jevons, the chief executive of the All England Club.
Yeah.
Would watch.
Yeah. put that on. Put that on tomorrow.
Got no issue with that scheduling. I tell you what other scheduling got no issue with. Maybe we do have more sway than we gave ourselves credit for, because Venus Williams against Elina Svitolina, we now know, will have centre court billing on Monday.
Yeah, that was Court 18 until we did our show yesterday. And now they're on the centre court. Now, I mean, it's what I hoped for. It's what I think it deserves. I think it absolutely warrants that billing. And I'm just really pleased that the All England Club see it the same way. You know, the committee, I feel as though of all the players who's maybe got a reason to complain over the years for scheduling appearance of courts, it's probably Venus Williams. As somebody who's won the title five times, I think she has had some court billings that aren't fitting of that record. But good on them. You know, they've done the right thing, and it's going to be absolutely amazing on Monday.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be Venus Williams and Elina Svitolina's half of the draw on Monday because, of course, Novak Djokovic, as the defending men's champion, will open centre court. Jannik Sinner also rounding things off on centre court on Monday. Very much pleased to be there vibes, I would say, for Jannik Sinner.
he's got some sway, hasn't he? He's got centre court on the first day. He was at the front of that poster that we were talking about the other day. Things are good for Jannik Sinner at Wimbledon so far.
They rate him, I reckon.
Jannik Sinner's in with someone important, isn't he? Let's start by talking about Venus Williams, because it's been media day today here at Wimbledon. It's always one of our favourite days of a slam. Not for Matt. He's worn just one of his average outfits for today. Mm. It's no draw
it's
day.
It's no draw day.
It's not bad, but really not bad.
In fact, it's media day. Quite a lot of the top players are actually coming through the press conference room tomorrow. I think I don't know if it's a deliberate effort to spread out the stories, I suppose, for the journalists. But Carlos Alcaraz will be tomorrow. Elena Rybakina, defending champion, will be tomorrow. Stefanos Tsitsipas will be tomorrow. If any of us can brave loved up Tsitsipas. We will cover those press conferences. Don't worry. We don't have a live show tomorrow. We don't have any kind of show tomorrow. But of course, we'll start our daily shows on Monday and we'll cover anything that comes up in tomorrow's press conferences. But today was the meat of media day. And I want to lead with Venus Williams, not only because there was some really newsworthy stuff in her press conference elicited by none other than David Law, but also because Matt has been kept on tenterhooks all day about the content of this press conference, because it was in room two, probably should have been room one, shouldn't it, on reflection, David? It was packed out.
Yeah,
room
I mean, they've got this brand new theatre media room for interviews, absolutely spectacular room, and I think maybe they slightly underestimated how much interest there was for Venus, who was put in a slightly smaller room. But, you know, it was still good vibes in there, and she was the first one to come in out of anybody.
Yeah, really. And it's not transcribed, room two. So Matt hasn't been able to look up what was said. And over lunch today...
I asked at lunch and...
I trailed. I said, oh, Matt, Venus had things to say to David, and David did his... spectacularly annoying, and I cannot emphasise that enough, thing of, oh, well, wait for the pod. I'll tell you on the pod.
So these lot have got to wait, and you've got to wait.
And we had quite an early lunch. I've been waiting a while.
So off you go then, David. Well, tell us everything.
This better be good.
I mean, first of all, can I just say, her pink hair is amazing, spectacular, that she's got at the moment. But she just looked incredibly relaxed, but also motivated, that sweet spot. She seemed fully fit, certainly in terms of the way she was talking. But the two or three really interesting things that came out of the press conference, the ones that I wanted to know about, were about the fact that she's been put on centre court. We only found that out about 15 minutes before she came into the interview room, and she didn't know. So I broke it to her. Ooh. In the press conference, and she said, "Really?" She said, "Oh, cool." And then she said, "No, I didn't know I was on centre court." And I mean, I think she probably thinks that's right as much as we do. But I think it wasn't a given in her mind that was going to happen. I also think she's probably okay if she was on court one, but I still think it's the right court.
This is all very meta. I'm having news broken to me by David about news that he broke to Venus Williams.
Yeah. But then she very quickly went into the experience that she has. And to me, this day of press conferences, and increasingly the circuit, is about players who've done it all using their experience and putting it to good use on the court. And she's excited. She's excited to be going out there. I said, "Will you be nervous going out there, despite all your five titles and all your years of playing here?" And she said, "Well, yeah, I probably will, because you're always a bit nervous." And that's something that all the top players, no matter how many years they've been doing this, Novak Djokovic says he gets nervous. Andy Murray's very clear how nervous he gets. And I think that that's human and right and understandable and probably good. I think there's a healthy degree of nerves. The other thing I wanted to ask is about her greatest achievements. And I was sort of torn because you don't get that many questions in these press conferences. And I was torn between asking whether what her greatest achievement was in all of the years she's been playing here at Wimbledon, and also the 50-year celebration of the WTA yesterday and her role in equal prize money coming about here in 2007. She penned her own op-ed in the Times back then ahead of that year, frankly putting pressure on the club to pay equal prize money. She was a massive part of that journey. And in the midst of answering the question, she basically answered both of them. She said, "My greatest achievement in my entire career is that we have equal prize money at Wimbledon." And it was a real moment, I think, and I think it was quite a moment for some of the other journalists in the room who maybe don't cover tennis full time or maybe weren't around it that closely at that time to realise just how significant she was in that coming about. I mean, look, it was going in that direction, but she was somebody who brought pressure to bear. She was the biggest name in the sport pretty much at the time. And there she was, you know, we've been told by Larry Scott, who was then the CEO of the WTA, that she was interrupting her Wimbledons in the years before that to speak to the committee and to make the case for equal prize money. And, well, the great news is that equal prize money came about. It's not even talked about now as a question mark. And you could see how much that meant to her that that has happened and that she had a role to play in it.
It was good, wasn't it?
Wow, that was good. That was worth the wait.
You'd have thought it.
That was, yeah, chills, actually.
Yeah, really, really special. And I'm glad she's saying it, because as you say, David, there are so many people out there who don't know the role that she played in that. And it's not just for her 5 Wimbledon titles that I think she should be on centre court. It's for that and other things as well. The fact that, I'm going to embarrass him now, but Matthew, behind our camera today, we were talking about his extraordinary knowledge of 90s tennis, which rivals potentially David's knowledge of 90s tennis, certainly late 90s tennis.
You want to have a 90s off, Matthew?
Well, there has been discussion, mostly from me, of a 90s off.
I'm very much
here for it. Anyway, and we were discussing who it was that got Matthew into tennis, and the answer was Venus Williams. And that will have been the case for a lot of people. And I just want to watch as much of her as I possibly can on the biggest courts before she retires. And if those matches are against Alina Svitolina on centre court, sign me up.
And I should add to that, it wasn't all jolly. Obviously, she was asked about what Alina has gone through as a Ukrainian player and what all the Ukrainian players have gone through over the last year and a half. And she made it very clear, I cannot imagine what it must be like for her. And of course, I sympathise with her incredibly strongly. But she didn't spend a long time talking about it because I think she just didn't feel qualified to be able to speak and put herself in her shoes. But there was real empathy there.
Arina Sabalenka came into the main press conference room shortly after Venus Williams. There was not quite a quick... It's actually quite a slow start to media day, wasn't it? We had Świątek and Sabalenka. Actually, no, I've got that order all wrong, but nobody cares about the chronology, so I'll press on. The reason I was coming on to talk about Arina Sabalenka is because she began her press conference with a statement, not a scripted statement, but something she had prepared that she wanted to say, which was that she wouldn't be answering questions about politics or the war over the course of Wimbledon. She said, if you have any questions or queries about my stance on things, I'll refer you to, please go to the WTA, who have transcripts at the ready where I have stated in the recent past my position on these matters. And she has. I get that. I respect it. I'm glad she said it up front. I hope it's respected. I respect her right to do that. I would also think it was I would applaud her if she were, you know, a Daria Kazatkina that spoke out in the way she has. But she said everything that I think it's reasonable to expect her to say, and potentially a lot more in Paris. And I personally am okay with this particular stance that she's taken.
Yeah, me too. I think that topic was front and centre of every Sabalenka press conference that she did at Roland Garros. She made it very clear. I think for now, unless something develops or changes, I think that topic is done, and we know how Sabalenka feels and where she stands on it. And yeah, I don't think it really serves anyone to just keep hammering her with those questions.
The only sort of hint she gave, the only sort of nod to that subject that she gave and being banned last year, was to talk about, she was prepared to talk about how hard it was for her not to be here last year. She said she was at home, she tried to think of herself as being on holiday during that fortnight, but every now and then tennis would pop up on the telly, and she said every time it did, she burst into tears.
Wow.
And she said she was really, really emotional about being back, and she looked giddy with happiness about it, quite frankly. She said, I'm just super emotional and super happy to be back here. And I wonder how much that sort of lightness, how far that could carry her this fortnight. I don't know.
Can't hurt, I wouldn't have thought.
Absolutely. You know. She was asked, incidentally, we didn't get to speak to Elena Rybakina today, as I say, she'll be on the schedule for tomorrow. But one thing we did see and hear about was her practice with Aryna Sabalenka on centre court. I think yesterday Molly McElwee of The Telegraph tweeted about this. She went out to watch the practice, and she said that Rybakina was barely winning points against Sabalenka. Rybakina looked like she was still really struggling physically, massively underpowered on the ground strokes. Obviously, we'll have the chance, hopefully, to hear from her about how she's feeling tomorrow. How honest she'll be, I don't know, because she's in the tournament, isn't she? So you don't want to go in and say, I'm feeling crap. Over to you, Shelby Rogers. Let's go. But it doesn't sound great to me. Molly actually asked Sabalenka about that practice in her press conference, and Sabalenka said, yeah, it was a really tough practice.
It was high quality.
It was great. And Molly was like, not what I saw.
Not what I saw.
But yeah, I don't know. I haven't done my predictions yet, and I know that falling into the reading too much into media day trap is real, and I've been in it so many times before, but I feel myself falling.
That's a pretty jarring observation, though, from Molly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Given she saw Sabalenka against Rybakina at the Australian Open, one of the matches of the year, probably the match of the year. Two players playing at the peak of the powers, hardly anything to choose between them. The idea that Rybakina can't compete with Sabalenka on the site of her biggest win. I know it's only a practice set, yes, but I think that that's significant.
Yeah, it's tough to imagine underpowered Elena Rybakina. Mm. Power just flows off her racket and off her string so easily. Yeah, very worrying. But you had very different take on Iga Świątek in terms of how she is post Bad Homburg, right?
Yeah, she seems so completely fine. I don't doubt she did have a very disrupted night's sleep and panicked the next morning, whatever. But if any Iga Świątek fans out there are worried about that withdrawal from Bad Homburg and what it means for Wimbledon, I'll calm your fears now. She is fine.
Yeah.
She is completely fine physically. I'm sure this was just a turn of phrase, but she described Bad Homburg as practice. So it was great to get a bit of practice on the grass. She's physically completely fine. I didn't get the impression that, I mean, obviously the way she goes about her career is total dedication. I don't doubt for a second she is totally dedicated in this moment to doing the best she can at this tournament. But big picture, I didn't get the impression she was that conquering grass and winning Wimbledon and making the sacrifices required for that, maybe even sacrificing clay potentially or taking something away from her mental energy at Roland Garros, I don't know. I didn't get the sense it was right at the top of her goals list. She kept on referencing how hard that quick turnaround is. She said, well, if you win Roland Garros, which obviously she's got that in her diary for the next recurring appointment for the next few years. If you win Roland Garros, it's blooming difficult to turn your attention to grass. And I do think there will come a point in her career where it becomes a feature goal. I mean, surely if she wins the Australian Open, she's then a Wimbledon away from the career slam, and I think that changes everything. But
I'm getting attacked by a bee.
Well, I didn't know whether to say anything, but a moment ago there was a spider situation emerging.
There was.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I was calm.
Did you see it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, saw it. Yeah.
That's a major test passed, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. And there's
well done.
All sorts of wasps and bees. I mean, what Iga Swiatek needs is for the French Open to just move itself to October every year.
Yes.
So that she would, I mean, she's proven that she can win it in those conditions.
Are you advocating for a disrupted calendar?
I think Iga Swiatek should be. But I did get the sense that she feels readier for this Wimbledon than she has in the past. I mean,
yes.
She talked about, obviously, there was no Wimbledon in 2020. In 2021, she actually reached the fourth round here and lost to Ons Jabeur. You know, it's not a bad loss at Wimbledon. She was looking fine in those first few rounds. And then last year, she was coming off the streak. She was trying to protect the streak, and she was trying to figure out how to get better on grass. She was doing all of those things in one.
The streak was definitely a problem last
totally.
Year.
Totally. Whereas now, I think it's just adapting to grass. And she spoke about the footwork and the movement, didn't she, in terms of being the biggest adjustment. And if there's anyone whose footwork and movement I trust to be able to improve on the surface, I think it would be her. And as we said, she's got a great draw to be able to try and do that. I think this Wimbledon, to me, feels very different to last year's Wimbledon for Iga Swiatek, especially with a few matches of practice under her belt.
Yeah, look, I think she's good enough and her draw is good enough that she could still reach the final without winning Wimbledon being her absolute top priority. Maybe even win it. I don't think she's Rafael Nadal in 2006,
yeah,
put it that way.
And if we're honest, who is, in terms of, it's not just his achievements, it's about his durability and his ability to refresh straight after winning it and go again.
It was abnormal.
I can't think of anybody else who's been able to do that. I suppose you'd have to say Novak Djokovic, having done it a couple of times, you know, one Roland Garros. Well, we'll find out, won't we? He's going to come in and he's going to try and win Wimbledon now. And, you know, we'll come on to him, but he looks fresh. Roger Federer did it in 2009. He won them both. But it's so. And these are people that have been there and done it for 15 years before those sort of situations were occurring. I do think Nadal was a one-off pretty much in that way. You know, maybe there are other players like Navratilova and Evert. You could perhaps say they did it too, of course, if you want to really go back. But it takes a lot out of these people to win a Grand Slam. The emotional high, all the lead-up, the hard work. Then you stop. And do you then try and get any grass court practice preparation or not? And I think maybe later in her career, if this remains unwon for her, I think she would start to target it. And I mean, Ivan Lendl won several French Open titles and eventually just stopped playing the French Open because he wanted to win here. And other players have done that too.
Didn't work out for Lendl, did it?
No. But he was never a natural on it either. I think she has the ability to figure this out. And the footwork, I think, is personally less of the problem. I think her ball trajectory is the problem. She's got to learn to flatten out that forehand, I think.
Slice backhand would be
well, it would help, but I think her backhand's so good, I think it can do what it does. I think the forehand needs to flatten out.
Other women that came through the press conference room today, we had Ons Jabeur. Didn't feel like I learned loads about where Ons Jabeur is at. It was a nice time. Being in the company of Ons Jabeur is a nice time. She gave an interesting little line about how, you know, she was asked a lot to reflect on last year. She was asked sort of how much she thinks about that run to the final here last year. She said, oh, well, I'd watched the Netflix episode, and that was emotional. But she said that seeing Elena Rybakina's picture in the locker room was a bit of a gut punch.
I'd sort of forgotten that she was a set-up.
Mm.
She was so close to winning this, yeah. And I do think there's a bit of trying to remember what happened last year, but also realise that this is now a new tournament. I think that's always a tricky balance for players. You know, I think we talk about that a lot with Bianca Andreescu, don't we? Sort of harking back to 2019. I mean, we do it ourselves, back to 2019.
We're the worst culprits of the lot.
I think it's a hard thing to do. But she said that she just wants to have fun on the grass was sort of her aim for the tournament. And I'm thinking, I mean, you always look like you're having fun on the tennis court, and that's a great thing. I think Ons Jabeur having fun, she tends to play well when she's doing that. So I don't know whether she was maybe deliberately trying to keep it a bit vague. It wasn't last year, Wimbledon is my goal, it's my dream, I've got the Venus Rosewater dish on my phone. Because I think she really rated herself last year and backed herself to be able to do that. She's not had many matches on the grass. She lost to Yula Niemeyer a couple of weeks ago. She lost pretty early last week
Future
as well.
Wimbledon champion, though.
It's true.
Yula Niemeyer.
It's true. But I don't know. I didn't get the sense that she was as confident coming into this Wimbledon
Same.
As she was last year. And that's, you know, last year was off the back of Roland Garros. It's quite interesting.
I got the feeling she probably does have the Venus Rosewater dish as the background on her phone. She just doesn't want to tell us about
exactly.
it this time.
Whereas last year, she was very happy to tell us.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I didn't think, oh, I'm writing off Ons Jabeur off the back of that. I
can kind of understand a player who's reached the final and is, I suppose, now expected to go and do it again or go on better. And in her mind, obviously, that's her big goal, but there are a lot of obstacles that she's going to have to get over.
She should contact Casper Ruud for advice.
On chilling out?
On
reaching first Grand Slam final.
David's forgotten.
Of course, yes. He did an excellent job.
He did exactly what Ons Jabeur did. Reached another one at the US Open and then backed up
That's
the
right.
first one.
I had forgotten. I always do that.
Have we been talking too much about Casper Ruud in a Wimbledon preview podcast today and yesterday? Quite possibly. Let's talk about Coco Gauff instead. She sounds in a good place, I thought. I don't think she's going to win the title. I don't think she's going to get past the quarterfinal. I think the draw is a problem for her regardless of what place she's in, unless Świątek were to lose before that quarterfinal, which could happen. But I did think she seemed in a good place mentally, better than perhaps before the French Open, when I do think there was a lot going on in her mind about her form and the pressure of defending that run to the final last year and everybody talking about the forehand. I mean, the issues on the forehand haven't gone away, but it just feels like there may be less front of mind, and she seemed really comfortable to me. She talked a lot, she did that Coco Gauff thing of talking about all the experience that she has.
How old is she? 18?
She is 19.
Oh.
Right? She was 15 in 2019. 15
yes,
plus 4
that's
is
right.
19.
Well done, Catherine.
Really hoping and praying there aren't people in the live chat right now correcting my maths. That would be a blow. Hannah is there to moderate. Please, please keep the wolves from the door, Hannah. She's 19.
Betty Stove when we need her.
She does have quite a lot of experience. She was like, the transition from clay to grass is really hard, but I've got quite a lot of experience at it now, so I don't find it too tough. And she also talked about playing a qualifier in round one. She's obviously got Sophia Kenin, which I find really interesting because Kenin is qualified. She's got 3 wins.
That is a tough draw.
Under her belt. And I thought that might pose a bit of anxiety to Coco Gauff. And she said, honestly, usually it would be worrisome. That's her word, not mine. It would, and I loved it. It would be worrisome for me to play a qualifier in the first round of a slam, particularly a slam like this where lead-up matches on this surface are at such a premium because the season is so short. But she said she feels really good about the matches she got in Eastbourne. She said, I won 3 matches in Eastbourne, and okay, I lost to Madison Keys, but she's just won the title today. She was in the kind of form where anyone can lose to Madison Keys. So she was kind of like, yeah, it's tough playing a qualifier who's won 3 matches on grass, but I'm playing really well and I'm going to be fine. It was quite reassuring from a Coco Gauff perspective, I thought.
Was there a little bit of a dig at Kenin when they were...
I wondered that.
Oh, excellent. I wasn't there. Do tell me.
I mean, because you're in the room and I only read the transcript.
Right, okay.
Because they've played twice and the head-to-head is 1-1. Both of those matches were right at the start of the season. It was 2020, so Coco Gauff, coming off her breakthrough in 2019, played Kenin at the Australian Open and lost that match. And Kenin obviously went on to win the tournament. And then they played at the start of this year in, I think it might have been Auckland, and Coco Gauff won. So the head-to-head's 1-1.
Thus crushing David's predictions dreams.
Yeah, thanks for that. No need to bring that up, was there?
Catherine has a photographic memory for incorrect David predictions.
Yes,
I think.
That's correct. Dating back several years.
Yeah. but she was asked about Kenin in 2020, and she said, her game's still the same, I've got better.
Mm.
Oh, yes. I love it.
And I'm thinking, yes, you have got better, but also I really don't think Kenin's game is still the same as when she won the Australian Open.
Because she's definitely not winning Grand Slams at the moment.
She's literally in qualifying now to get into these tournaments. And I don't know.
You're saying she was damning, but actually not as damning as she should have been. Not as damning as Matt Roberts.
Yeah, she should have said, she's got much worse and I've got way better.
Yeah. So basically, I'm going to win easily.
But I don't know, is it almost more, I don't know, maybe it's more damning to say Kenin's game hasn't changed and now look where she is. I don't know.
She said it in a very Coco Gauff way, which is you could very easily not notice that it was damning. But it was a bit damning, and I don't think Coco Gauff is a cliquey person at all. I can imagine her being incredibly warm and welcoming to everybody in the locker room, but Kenin definitely isn't in the fold.
No,
is
she's
she,
not part of the
of American players.
Of
she's on the outside. I certainly don't think there would be any kind of, oh, I can't say that about her because she's one of my mates or one of my Billie Jean King Cup teammates. I don't think that sensitivity would exist. I think she just said what she thought, and what she thought was a bit damning about Sophia Kenin.
It's one of the reasons that Kenin is so interesting when you throw her in to the mix, and she's a disruptor.
The mix?
Well,
did you just put Kenin in the mix?
No. Another mix.
Steady on.
Well, I just find her really interesting because I think she enjoys upsetting all the predictions and all the hype. I mean, I think she is one of those players that, okay, she's had a really bad time of late, but even when she'd won the Australian Open, nobody was picking her to go all the way at the French Open later in the year, which she reached the final of. And I think that happens with her. And I'm guilty of that. When we look down the predictions, even when she was at her very best, do I ever put her in the latter stages? No. And it's because I think her game looks as though it has limits. But in truth, she's done something that Coco Gauff has not done anything like as well as. You know, winning a Grand Slam title, I mean, you know, that is Coco Gauff's dream, and she's so on the record about that. She doesn't shy away from it. So I think it's a cracking first round, that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's really, really interesting.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court shows in Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. The men's press conferences today, as I said, Carlos Alcaraz, the top seed. We have to wait until tomorrow, as we do for Stefanos Tsitsipas. We're going to do paper, scissors, stone to decide who has to go to that one. No, just throwing that out
there.
Do
you call it paper, scissors, stone?
What do you call it?
Rock, paper, scissors.
Well, yeah, that I would call it either.
Okay.
What would you call it?
I just flip a coin, like normal, you know, like my generation. Because I don't know how to do it.
I don't think paper, scissors, stone is a modern thing, David.
It is. It's not. It is a modern thing.
David, say it for the second pod in a row. We're on YouTube now. We have to be more in touch with the youth.
It's more modern than flipping a coin, like my generation would.
I'm pretty sure rock, paper, scissors dates back possibly centuries.
Does it? No. Okay.
Again, thoughts and prayers for Hannah in the live chat.
Hannah's got my back.
Let's talk about... Should we talk about Novak Djokovic?
Yes. Mm.
Defending champion, world number two, staggeringly relaxed.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
His first words were, "I feel great." I almost felt like we could have wrapped it up then.
Oh, like as in the whole tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, he's going to win it.
Yeah.
Give him the trophy. Let's play for second place.
Well, that's what he came into Roland Garros like. If you remember his pre-tournament press conference, it was notable by how he wasn't talking about injury concerns. He was looking as ready as you could possibly be, and he won that tournament. And honestly, anything can happen. He could have an issue that comes along that he knows nothing about right now. He could run into a player playing out of his mind. Anything can happen in sport, but he just couldn't look more the favourite for this tournament if he was at any age. I don't think.
Yeah, and I mean he was certainly talking up his game at Roland Garros, wasn't he, right from the start, as you say? But there was a heaviness and a kind of darkness to some of those press conferences. He didn't seem in the best mood, and here it was much more relaxed. He seemed much happier. It was much lighter. He was actually asked by Steve Fraser of the Times about how he's going to make sure that he doesn't lose motivation now that he's got you know, the lead in the men's Grand Slam race, like he did in 2016 when he won Roland Garros for the first time and was holding all four. There was a big drop in his motivation, and he just absolutely quashed that idea, didn't he? He just said he's so motivated still. And I think, you know, going back to what you were saying about his experience and the experience of players, he's got experience of losing motivation in the past. He knows now how not to and how to keep setting goals, and like he's just in such a perfect place right now. And there is literally one man in this draw who has beaten him on grass, and he's got a metal hip. I mean, so yeah, in short, I feel great.
It did strike me when you talk about him looking relaxed, which he did, you know, they were trying to get out of him, now that you've won 23 and you've overtaken Nadal, now do you feel like a weight has lifted? And he said, well, not really, no, I don't feel any more relaxed about this tournament.
He had calendar slam written on his face.
But I also think,
Sharpie.
You know, these players, they need, it's the edge that they need. They don't want to come into these things too loose. You know, they put their game face on, and we saw it there. I mean, I will talk about experience with Andy Murray. I think his press conference was absolutely fascinating. But Novak Djokovic, that whole revelation during Roland Garros that he uses his aura in tie breaks to bear now, and it's kind of almost calculating with these guys, and so it should be. Use what you got.
Yeah, I just don't think there's anyone in this draw that he's remotely afraid of on grass.
No.
Not at all.
No.
We will come on to talk about Andy Murray next, because you're right, I think that was probably the press conference of the day, maybe Venus Williams aside. Before we do, Novak Djokovic was one of the players, one of the many players that was asked today about Saudi Arabia and Andrea Gaudenzi's statement recently that he's in talks with Saudi Arabia and the Public Investment Fund, which is an arm of the Saudi Arabian state. And Billie Jean King and Steve Simon and Mickey Lawler's comments yesterday about the WTA being open to talks, no decisions having been made. They sound slightly more reticent than the ATP. No deals done for either tour, but they're certainly open-minded about it. And Billie Jean King, at yesterday's 50th anniversary celebration, made pretty clear her feelings on tour tennis official involvement in Saudi Arabia and other parts of the world with poor human rights record, which is that while she has concerns about it, she always believes in communication and openness being the right way forward and the only way to progress, and she wants to see progress in those parts of the world. And that's been real food for thought for me, because I feel sick at the thought of Saudi Arabia's inevitable creeping involvement in tennis. But I also think Billie Jean King is never wrong. So I'm sort of balancing those two things in my mind at the moment, and I haven't reached a conclusion. One thing that has struck me today, with the repeated raising of the Saudi Arabian issue, is how normalised it all feels, and how unshocking it now is when players don't really express much opposition to it. Novak Djokovic talked about anxiety about preserving the history and tradition of the sport in a potential collaboration with Saudi Arabia, but he didn't say anything about human rights concerns. That doesn't mean he doesn't have them. But I want the first thing people say in response to questions about Saudi Arabia to be, there are things I'm uneasy about. Even people that are supportive, there should still be things you're extremely uneasy about here. Is it that hard to say, I am uneasy about somewhere where homosexuality is criminalised, where women's rights are appalling, where, you know, journalists are being murdered? That shouldn't be hard, and it should be shocking that people aren't saying that, and yet nobody said that today, really. Andy Murray came the closest, and it didn't even feel that newsworthy. And that normalisation, that creeping normalisation, really worries me, because that is the whole point of sports washing. And I do think that is a direct result of what has happened with LIV and the Saudi Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour. Legitimization, normalization was exactly what they wanted to buy, and they've bought it.
Yeah, look, there's no real talk in tennis at the moment in terms of Saudi Arabia setting up a rival tour, which is obviously what they originally did in golf. And that was, I don't think, I don't think that was their end game in golf. That was not their goal. That was just something they felt they had to do to sort of gate crash into the sport. And now what they've done is, by sort of basically sort of taking over the PGA Tour, when that eventually comes in, it hasn't done yet, but it sounds like it will, they've sort of bought legitimacy in the sport. And that's what Andy Murray said. He said that he wouldn't play in Saudi Arabia, certainly for any exhibitions that have been mentioned in the past. He absolutely would not do that. But once Saudi Arabia gets itself into the sport in a way that is sort of forcing players to go, because otherwise they're missing out on ranking points and they're missing out on proper playing opportunities against top players. That is the end game for Saudi Arabia, and they're getting that in golf, it seems, and it feels like they're going to skip out the sort of hostile rival tour in tennis and just go straight into sort of becoming part of the ATP tour. And based on what Steve Simon was saying and Billie Jean King yesterday, it doesn't feel too long that the WTA are going to be there either. And yeah, I mean, like you, I mean, Billie Jean King is sort of our guiding light, our sort of moral compass, I suppose. And she had a very different take to the one that I had. So I'm still considering that and thinking about that. But from the WTA's perspective, they've just announced this brilliant initiative to get equal prize money. You know, I still think it's some years away, but it's a great stated goal and intention. But how will they possibly be able to do that if the ATP is in with Saudi Arabia? How will the WTA be able to do that without themselves being in with Saudi Arabia? I just don't see how that would be possible. So that brings a whole new sort of element to it as well. But yeah, just I would echo your thoughts on I just want players to state up front that there are moral issues here that are actually bigger than tennis.
Yeah, absolutely. And this isn't going away. It's going to keep coming up, and we'll keep covering it as and when it does come up. Andy Murray's press conference, we all went. I think everybody in the media centre went. I actually thought some of the press conferences today were a little bit sparsely attended. I don't know whether that's because there were a lot of British players in smaller rooms that a lot of the British journalists would have been distracted with, and obviously a large cohort of the media here are British for obvious reasons, us included. But everyone showed up for Andy Murray, I think, and I doubt anyone regretted their decision. It was an interesting 15 minutes, wasn't it, David?
Yeah, well, he looks and sounds as well as he has in years here at Wimbledon. I would say since he won it in 2016. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win. I mean, we did have a bit of a laugh about that because
David did a gag in his question to Andy Murray, and he laughed. It was lovely.
Well, I mean,
stuff.
I can't even exactly remember how it came about.
Well, the whole press conference started with a question from a British journalist. Apologies, I can't quite remember. Rob Moore from The Sun, saying, Andy, I don't know if you know this, but the last time you played a Brit in the first round of Wimbledon, of course he's drawn Ryan Peniston in the first round this year, the last time you played a Brit in the first round of Wimbledon, you won the tournament. And he said, in his deadpan way, he does that, there's that delayed reaction where he's looking the questioner dead in the eye and you just don't know which way it's going to go. And then he smiles and goes, I didn't know that. Oh, good.
great.
you said, give me the trophy now.
Did he?
Yeah.
It was great. It developed into a great moment, but there was about a second and a half of real anxiety, I imagine, for Rob Moore. Anyway, so that was the kind of precursor to you doing your little gag.
Well, David, I just said, obviously my question's now irrelevant because you're going to win the trophy, but short of winning the trophy, what in your current state of mind and physicality would you be happy with at the end of this tournament, and what do you think you're capable of doing? I mean, and he said, look, a lot of it can depend on circumstances. If you do draw Novak Djokovic in the second round, which he hasn't, I mean, we've been talking about Peniston to play the winner of Team and Tsitsipas being a good draw for him. But if he did draw Novak Djokovic, you could play out of your mind and still lose. And that's perfectly acceptable. And you could come off thinking, well, I did pretty well and I'm happy with how I played. But obviously that wouldn't be what he would want to achieve. What came through was his excitement at his own physical fitness, his own form, his own mental approach, just generally at the moment. And more than any, I mean, he said, I regard myself as one of the best grass court players in the world. And that's when I thought of Novak Djokovic and tiebreaks, and Novak Djokovic and Alcaraz, and putting pressure on these young players who haven't been there and done it. He said himself, I'm the guy who played Novak Djokovic.
He knew he was the only guy in the draw that had ever beaten Djokovic on grass.
Yep.
He sort of said it a little bit humbly, didn't he? He was like, I'm not sure if there's...
There might be some others.
You are sure. Yeah, you know.
And I think he made it clear he is going to bring his presence, his aura, to bear at this tournament. That is what I think you can expect over the next 2 weeks. However long his run lasts, I think he's going to use the crowd. I think he's going to use his noise on the court. I think he's going to be loud. I think he's going to be in the face of whoever he plays, and he's going to make them feel what it is like to share a court with the guy who beat Novak Djokovic in straight sets in the final 10 years ago.
Good luck, Ryan Peniston.
Did you see his cheeky little grin when he said that he'd done well in his practice set against Novak Djokovic?
I did see that. Yeah. But
I don't know what you think of it?
He was trying very hard not to tell us the score.
Yeah.
Or at least maybe he'd lost it 7-5. Maybe he'd lost it 6-3, but he played well.
I thought it was
well,
either
but...
I lost 6-love or...
Oh, no, I read it as...
It went really well.
And I was trying to ask Novak Djokovic in his press conference how it had gone from his perspective, and I never got the chance. I never got a question. Because, I mean, you know, Novak Djokovic gets asked a lot of questions, and it also his answers go on. I mean, he really does try and give a very considered answer to every question. So, unfortunately, I don't have the answer for you.
The other really newsworthy, I think, topic that came up in Andy Murray's press conference was about the subject of retirement. And when the journalist that asked this initial question, it was Kerry Dean from BBC Scotland, wasn't it, about Andy Murray, how he thinks he might end up retiring, I bristled a bit because I thought Andy Murray, ahead of Wimbledon, does not want to talk about retirement. I thought he is going to bat this away. And he really, really didn't.
No.
He said, I have an end date in mind. He said, it's not anytime soon. Don't start preparing a cake or anything. But I have an end date in mind. I don't intend to, he said, I'm not going to do a Nadal and tell people about it really far in advance. He was pretty clear that he doesn't fancy a victory lap or anything. But he does have that date in mind. And that's a real shift, I think. And I followed up on that. It was the last question of the press conference. I wondered if actually the physical and emotional strain of what he's putting himself through in order to be out there with aforementioned metal hip, what he's having to go through in training, the time he's having to spend away from his family, 4 kids he's got, yeah. And he is a real family man, isn't he? This is significant sacrifice at this stage of his life. I wondered if he needs that to not be infinite in order for it to be doable. And he said, yeah, didn't he? And he said that changed at the Australian Open this year. He said, when I was doing what I was doing during that run in Australia, winning in the middle of the night, coming from match points down and spending 17 hours on court, he said, maybe this isn't that good for me. And I thought, same, Andy.
I was having the exact same thought, Andy. Yeah, going to bed at 7 a.m.
The tennis podcast felt the same. And that was really, really interesting, I thought. That thing. I don't think it made him any less hungry or committed to it. Mm. But I think he maybe just had a sort of slightly practical moment of, this can't go on forever. Certainly not doing it this way. And the problem for him is doing it that way is what he loves. It makes him feel alive.
It's all he knows.
It's all he knows. It's a very interesting moment, I
think. I think you're right. I think it frees the mind to know that you can throw yourself into this for a finite period of time, that you've agreed with your family and your own mind, whatever it might be. I would still say that we've kind of been there before, and he's so in love with it all. And I think what's very clear is he wants to wring out every drop that is there. He said, I want to carry on playing to see what I've got.
He said, I want to carry on until my hip runs out.
Until it finishes.
He said, I'll play till my hip finishes. He said it with a sort of smirk. It was a really bleak...
You start searching for the word, and I think, oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, he's sort of got the next hip in a storage cupboard somewhere ready to go upon his retirement. Last press conference of the day today was Daniil Medvedev. He, in fact, is the reason that we moved this podcast a little bit later than intended, because what is a Media Day podcast without Daniil Medvedev? And we so missed him at the French Open when he didn't come to Media Day. It felt like essential viewing.
And yet due to a cable crisis.
Due to factors.
Catherine was the only one who actually went to it.
My question to him was about the fact that up until recently his ATP bio said that grass was his favourite surface. I think that changed. I've been monitoring that to see when it would change, and I don't know exactly when it did, but at some point this year that was amended
to
hardcore.
They weren't just carrying on
maybe
the joke.
Maybe it was during Indian Wells when he declared himself a hardcore specialist mid-match.
Yeah, I'd have loved it if they'd just changed it to clay.
Well, he said, I do really like grass. That wasn't a mistake or a troll. I did used to think of it as my favourite surface, and I don't think his enjoyment or liking of grass is diminished at all. He said, I've just got way better on hard courts, and he went, I'm even quite good on clay now. So actually grass is kind of in third place, but not because I like it any less than I used to, just because I've got better elsewhere.
Channeling his Coco Golf.
But he said he has, in his own words, big goals for Wimbledon this year. He said he's had a great year, right? He's won, fantastic. Five titles, but he's really motivated by how poorly he's done in slams this year by his own standards. I think he feels, I've been playing great tennis. My slam record, which is where it matters the most, isn't reflecting that, and he's got a point to prove. He's got something to rectify.
Mm. Interesting. And he has played so little at Wimbledon, you know, in terms of since Medvedev became Medvedev, which was, I think we can all agree, that glorious summer of 2019, you know, there was no...
I can do that now, we're on YouTube.
We're going to get hauled off the air.
That was just a little present for anybody joining us on YouTube.
Go to sleep at night.
How can I make a serious Medvedev point now? You've the pod has peaked. You know, there was no Wimbledon in 2020. He did okay in 2021. And he was banned last year. You know, Medvedev as Medvedev has so little Wimbledon experience. And that, you know... It feeds back into that conversation of why Novak Djokovic is such a strong favourite here, that even Daniil Medvedev, who's beaten Novak Djokovic in a Grand Slam final, we, under more normal circumstances, I think we would think of Medvedev as a real threat to Djokovic here. But I just don't know what to expect from Medvedev, given that lack of experience here and his poor form in the slams this season.
Mm. Interesting, though, isn't it? He's sort of...
Very.
He becomes a dangerous floater rather than somebody on whom we're placing
to me, he should,
expectations.
He should be good on this, because grass courts have become more like hard courts. He's got the flat
hitter, yeah.
He's got
big
serve. You know,
agreeing with one another, David.
I don't like this. Maybe the forehand is a little too elaborate and in the wind-up for this.
But it looks too elaborate on hard courts as well.
I mean,
it always looks
weird. He lost
weird.
To Hubert Hurkacz one year when he really should have been making
but
further
progress.
But
he's got a Hubert Hurkacz problem.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think because he's not done it before, we tend to miss him out. You know, because he just hasn't made the breakthrough, he tends to get ignored in the chat beforehand. Maybe we need to change that.
Well, we'll see, won't we? Will he play Monday or Tuesday? I've put Matt.
Well,
on the
he's
spot
not
here.
In Novak Djokovic's
so he'll play
half
Tuesday.
Of the draw, so he'll play Tuesday.
Okay. We will be back next on Monday.
Yep.
Our plan for the daily pods from Monday through to second Sunday of Wimbledon, men's finals day. Of course, there's no middle Sunday anymore, so we're right the way through, 14 days straight, is that we will be with you live on YouTube shortly after the conclusion of singles play on the show courts. So just allowing time for us to leg it from wherever we've been watching or whatever press conference we've been in and to set up here in this incredible spot. We will be with you to wrap up the day's play and look ahead to the next one. We'll advertise the exact time as soon as we know it, but we will be with you. We are the place to come for your review of the day at Wimbledon. And for, you know, assorted obscene gestures.
Yeah.
And, of course, we'll be available as a podcast, as per usual, shortly after that. The show will go up very soon after we finish recording. So lots to look forward to over the coming fortnight of the Tennis Podcast live from Wimbledon. We have our Wimbledon mascot, Erin. Who continues to look displeased with the fact that she's the Wimbledon mascot. Send us some more photos, Daryl. Prove to us that she's pumped about her new role. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. David's got Maisie. Matt has got Darwin. The anxious time of Grand Slam predictions is approaching.
Yeah.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. Hello to them. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, for Stephen Ralston, who is in Guildford.
Oh, like Dennis Ralston. Who's immense. Sadly no longer with us, but was a great player and coach from yesteryear. I can't remember exactly the years, but I mean, I remember... We paid tribute to him when he passed away a few years ago. And, I'm really proud of us, Catherine.
That's a very good tennis name. Where did you say Stephen was from?
Guildford.
Lovely stuff.
Right, Stephen. Thanks for being a friend of the Tennis Podcast.
Lovely cobbled high street in Guildford. Lovely stuff. Thank you, Stephen.
We've also got Daniel Bergston, who is from Stockholm, but now living in France.
Ooh. Hello, Daniel.
Like Daniel Evans, who is one of my press conferences today.
I feel like I might have met Daniel.
Okay.
Oh. TBC on that. I think I've met Daniel. Hello, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
Well, he's been listening to and supporting the Tennis Podcast since 2015.
Oh, good
work.
Wow,
that is too long
so
ago.
Basically, when Matt Roberts came on board, he was in.
Yeah, but Matt Roberts was not an audio presence in 2015.
No,
that
but
is a lot of years of listening to just you and me before the payoff.
Yeah. Okay, but
he
got the gist of student Matt on the on the internet, on Twitter.
He was holding out. Thank you, Daniel.
And finally, we have Ricky Karaviotis.
Hello, Ricky.
Ricky is in Sydney.
Fantastic.
It's winter in Sydney at the moment, isn't
it? Yeah, actually, you know how I asked, I wonder what the weather's like in Melbourne at this time of year yesterday? Well, somebody wrote to tell me, said it was about 15 degrees and horrible.
Yeah, so. I don't think this is the time to visit Melbourne,
no,
necessarily, or Sydney. But lovely place generally.
Yep.
Thank you, Ricky. Any tennis Rickies? I can do a sporting Ricky. I can do Ricky Hatton.
Okay.
The boxer.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm struggling on Rickies in the tennis world. We'll have to give it some extra thought.
Ricky Hatton it is.
I've got Mackay in my head, isn't it?
Okay.
We'll fact check this, guys.
Don't know why I said that live.
Ricky, thank you ever so much for your support. You are our only tennis Ricky as things stand at the moment. We are not counting Ricky Mackay. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching on YouTube if that's what you're doing. Do click like and subscribe if you're enjoying what you're watching. If you're not, do us a favour and hit like and subscribe anyway. Throw us a bone. Tell your friends about the Tennis Podcast. Follow us on social media. Leave us an iTunes review. It's not called iTunes anymore, is it? It's called Apple Podcasts.
Even because, I knew that.
Because we're down with the youth. Apple Podcasts, leave us a review on there. And most importantly, join us again on Monday for our first live, or recorded if you're listening on the podcast from Wimbledon, from this incredible spot overlooking Course 18. We'll be here. Hopefully you'll be here. And we'll see you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.